Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
All right, welcome in. Another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints football talk from our studios at Meat House. With me today, Heath Elson-san, Wesley Coleman. The Saints pull off I feel like I keep saying this, improbable, it's surprising. I didn't think they would win, but they come out of this game and beat arguably, the best team in the league, one of the best teams in the league, one of the top three teams in the league, 27-36. New Orleans pulls it out.
Hey, folks, all right, listen, I'm so not in the mood for you guys. You're blabbering on and on, okay, and it's enough, all right? It's enough. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, today's Monday, all right? So stop doing your stupid radio thing. And if you want to pick up where you left off tomorrow, at least it'll be Tuesday, all right? So just keep it down. Actually, don't keep it anything. Just stop, okay? Just stop doing what you're doing.
Wesley and I, prior to the show, were just talking, and we're like, do we just not realize how good they are because we just beat them all the time? So we don't really appreciate how good they are. But anyway, Heath Elson-san, how are you today, sir?
I'm good, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. I'm not going to talk to you, Wesley. If you heard the last show, we kind of established that. No, I'm kidding. Hey, so the legend, the goat killer, Trevor Siemian, comes in. I mean, I don't know where to start first. Is it just the horrible news of Jameis Winston? I did really feel like, look, I've been a Jameis supporter. I felt like he was the best guy for the job, but he gave me the feeling that he had the talent, that if you just put some smaller things together, that all of a sudden, and it was getting better every week. And then all of a sudden he goes down with an injury, and it was very deflating. I mentioned to Wesley that I did get excited about the win, but there still was this empty feeling of like, okay, are we going to be able to keep this up without someone who at least has that kind of potential?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. This is a really tough break and a tough loss. We had him on a 1-year deal and incentive laden, and, he got the reins, and it was like, okay, we're going to be able to see if Jameis is who we need going forward, and if he can resurrect his career and cut down on the mistakes. And, and like you, if he just puts a few things together and cuts down on the mistakes, he can get most of that 5,032 touchdowns back without the 30 interceptions. Well, we just hit the jackpot, and for him to go down like this and after 7 games or whatever, or 6 games, we're not really going to get a chance to see the rest of this year. So then the Saints are going to be faced with, do we sign him again for another 1-year deal or whatever, but, so that leaves us with Hill and Siemian, and so I agree with you. It's like, boy, I was excited we still were able to win that game, but you start thinking, what about the next one? How many more can we win?
Before we get to the rest of the schedule, or at least next month, yeah. Wesley, let's talk about the legend, the goat killer. Let's talk about Trevor Siemian. Listen, okay, look, we know who the guy is. Now, we said this about Jameis. Why doesn't it apply to Trevor? I'm sure the Saints will make him the best version of himself. But even that, it was good enough last week. Would it be good enough with a defense having a week's worth of film and preparation for him in particular? I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to come down. I mean, Sean Payton's done amazing things the last few years with Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. And then, I can't imagine the position Trevor Siemian's in, that he hasn't played a meaningful football game in 4 years. but he still had to, I mean, know the calls and know the other players on the Buccaneers and be prepared just in case. So, I mean, kudos to him. And apparently he is a pretty, calm, collected guy that doesn't, get too swayed either way. He did what he needed to do, I guess. I mean, he completed about 50% of his passes. Obviously, you hope that you get him a week of practice as the number one. If he's the number one, maybe he gets it up to the 60% that Jameis has been completing this year. He's not going to have the downfield arm that Jameis does. I mean, that pass to Kevin White was Trevor Siemian getting after it and really getting the ball. And that's 37 yards. I mean,
here's the thing. I look at Siemian, and I hate when people just make a comparison to a guy that's on your team or was on your team, but that's what you can relate it to.
Yeah.
He's very Breeze-esque. He seemed calm. He was seemed to be better in the short passing game. And that throw that he made to Kevin White, he dropped back and he released the ball. And the point is, yeah, maybe he didn't have enough, but he got rid of it quick and the ball was in the air. And, it, you know, for lack of a better explanation, timing so that the ball comes down, the guy gets a little separation, catches it. Breeze never threw the ball 60 yards downfield either, but he would make a pump fake or whatever. And next thing you know, he's going on the top and he put the ball right on spot. So I think that, again, you know, if you want to relate him to somebody, you know, you look at Jameis. Jameis is not like, doesn't remind me of Drew Breeze in really any way. But when you look at Trevor, you'd say he's more of a Drew Brees type. Let me give you, introduce you, if you will, to Trevor Siemian. 13 of 18 for 67 yards on passes that were 10 yards or less. And the reason I bring that up is because during the game, I just kind of felt like Jameis is a big play guy, but has himself said that he needs to improve on his short passing accuracy. And Trevor, while he doesn't have the long arm, you saw something that just made you feel a little bit better. It's like a 5-yard completion, right? So 3 for 18 on those short passes. The guy's played 24 games in his career, 13 wins. So he has a winning record. Let's see, 5,600, almost 5,700 yards, 30 touchdowns, 24 interceptions. So again, more touchdowns than interceptions.
Super Bowl champion.
Is that right? Was he on the team with as a backup for
with Peyton Manning?
With Manning, I didn't realize that. So let's see. He scored on 5 of 8 drives against, again, one of the better defenses in the league. Now, I got to preface that by saying maybe one of the better front sevens in the league. But the weakness of that team was just a decimated secondary. And we had just enough. And this is what I was worried about is, you know, would we have the offensive skill to take advantage of that? And he was just good enough to get it done. And here's the thing to me that makes him a special player, and I don't think that anybody can argue, is that anyone who get the ball to Kevin White, you got to find a special place for that guy. I'm joking because I'm the one who last week argued a little point about what the Saints have been trying to do with Kevin White. And I think now that he's coming out, and I'm not going to go back into that. But the fact of the matter is, it makes you wonder, although I heard Peyton say, no, he didn't feel it's the case. That's who he's throwing to in practice. So does he feel more comfortable throwing it to, you know, Callaway, or does he feel more comfortable throwing it to White? And there makes me wonder if he's like, that's my boy. We work together on the scout team. I'm going to get him a rock. So anything else that, listen, I'm not going to go, and this is what we're going to transition into, but I'm not trying to do the clickbait thing. To me, I'm going to let you guys give your opinion. I don't think there's any argument. And I know there's a lot of debate going on. Oh, Hill, is it going to be Siemian? Is it going to be Hill? And to me, there's no way that Peyton calls Hill into the office and says, listen, we're going to just go with Siemian and keep you in your old role, with the one exception, if he's not healthy, then I think you could see it. So I'll start with you, Wesley. Give me your thoughts on next week's starter. And let's do it this way. Let's do assuming that Hill is healthy.
I think that it can be determined a little bit depending on like the opponent that we're going to play. I think that playing Atlanta next week, I could argue either way, but I'll argue 55-45 that Siemian actually gets the start.
Do you think so?
I do.
Okay, but are you taking what I said into consideration? You're saying if Hill is completely healthy, you still think Siemian gets the start?
I think that, I mean, Peyton has a way he can spin it, that this is going to be a defensive game where we don't need to turn the ball over, and he wants to see what Siemian can do if Hill is supporting him. Now, I'm saying that I think Hill gets more snaps mm-hmm. at quarterback than he's gotten all season. I think he gets 12 snaps.
I can feel where your game plan is going. So
I think that Sean Payton likes to be cute and overthink it and show that he's the smartest guy in the room. And so I could see, you know, Simeon getting 40 snaps and Hill getting 12 or, you know, whatever, however that breaks down. I could see the 75-25 kind of split being cute with it. And I don't know. It's really tough to tell you what the difference is between the two as far as how many games we're going to win moving forward. I think you got different game plans, different ways you win those games. Does Hill over 10 games win more games than Simeon over 10 games? I just don't know. I can't.
And you know what? That. Here's the thing is I don't disagree with you in your logic. I disagree with your selection just because I just kind of see it that, you know, he's going to have to make a decision, but I don't disagree with your logic. Matter of fact, I've gone back and forth with that over the last couple of days myself. Heath, you're the tiebreaker, man. Who, and we're starting off this and just give your answer, and then you can move on to the realistic part of it. But if Hill is healthy, who you think the Saints go with?
If he's healthy, I think they go with Hill, but I personally would rather see him go with Simeon. I think you get more with Simeon at quarterback and Taysom playing his traditional Taysom role than you do the other way around.
You know what, man? Y'all just supporting what I was thinking. Please go ahead.
You're about a guy in Simeon that's got a shit ton more experience at quarterback than Taysom Hill does. Taysom Hill's got a whole, four games of starting experience or whatever? Simeon started for 2 years. He started in college. Taysom Hill spent 3 years of his college career pissed off at Utah Rehab. State for breaking his knees up.
Right.
And so the bottom line is that he has more experience. And this was a guy who came into the game and did what he was able to do, virtually getting no snaps whatsoever. Okay. And so, look, I'm not going to sit here and try to tell you that Simeon is great and he's this gem.
No, that's not the point.
Okay. Yeah. But I do remember a guy. I remember watching him play at Northwestern and thinking, man, I like this dude. He's scrappy. He pulled some upsets at Northwestern. He ran. He looked good. Came into the league with Denver. Denver actually gave him 2 years. They saw enough in him that for a team that's gone through quarterbacks faster than water, they gave him 2 years. And, you know, inconsistency was his problem. Some games he looked great.
And he got sacked a bunch with that Denver offensive line. Yeah, he got sacked a lot.
He was on a really bad team. And, so I guess my point is I could see Simeon with his skill and his extra experience and playing for Sean Payton and getting – practice reps and prepared for the game, coming in and being a starter, and Taysom going back to Taysom's role, to me, is better than the other way around. Those two parts added together are better than the other.
One of the things that I said when I was trying to go through my argument is I thought to myself, and I texted this in the group, it could be possible. Just complete speculation is that you had a whole offseason. Hill had a whole offseason to prepare. I heard he slimmed down. He worked on just being a quarterback. He comes into camp. There's a whole summer battle. And could it possibly be that, and I think the answer will be this weekend, could it be that Sean Payton said, I saw everything the guy has, and it's not good enough. And that could be part of the decision-making process too. Wesley, you have some more to add to this.
Yeah, if we want to add in extra layers to this. One, Taysom Hill is more valuable in that role because it doesn't look like Michael Thomas is on the verge of coming back either. And I'm sure we'll get into that, but just quickly covering that, Michael Thomas isn't going to be here next week or the week after probably. So Taysom being able to take that load. We just traded for a running back because our running back room is light. So Taysom Hill being able to be a halfback and be a tight end a little bit and a receiver helps us in two areas where we're struggling and did not trade for somebody today at the trade deadline. And then one thing I was going to say, Dave, is I understand what you're saying about comparing what Simeon did on the short passes and all. My counterpoint was this was the first game that Deontay Harris and Traquan Smith played together. So it's the first time we've had two number three receivers in the
league. And listen, I have more respect for him than that. I know
what you mean. So two number twos, and I think Harrison Smith are number twos, and Callaway number three. And so I think that Jameis would have had his best game of the year if he was healthy in this game too. That's a good thing for this team moving forward. And then Heath was kind of alluding to it, but Trevor Siemian right now is not a worse quarterback to me than Teddy Bridgewater was 3 years ago.
Like, no, I mean, how much difference?
Yes, I know Teddy was a higher round pick and all that, but experience in the league and things they've done. If Sean Payton can go 5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater, he can make Trevor Siemian help him make good decisions. We got really lucky this last week because Trevor made two bad decisions and one interception was called back and one was just dropped. But he, you know, but besides that, he hopefully got that out of his system and that he's going to have a week of getting coached
up. And again, listen, that's going to be part of it. Like the guy, I think we will see a better version than what we saw. But when I saw him in Denver, I thought the same thing. He looked calm and controlled. He dropped back, released the ball in time. Now, again,
he runs at the right time. He's athletic enough and will get out there and run.
And I liked what I saw, but let's not fool ourselves to think that, oh, now we have the guy. No, but do we have a guy that, based on what we have, a strong running game, strong offensive line, and a very good defense? I'm shying away from the great moniker, but a very strong defense. The guy can help us win. Now, can he help us consistently win three games in the playoffs versus the best teams in the league? I mean, I got to say right now, I don't think so. But hey, man, he's gonna have the opportunity to change my mind.
Can Taysom?
No, and that's okay,
the flip side.
Okay,
can Taysom?
I start off by saying that Jameis, while I was on his side, I was Team Jameis. It was mostly based on I felt I knew what Hill was. Jameis is a guy that pedigree. If he could put it together. And, you know, of course, all the things that we made that weren't tangible, that were just kind of excuses to make us believe that we had a chance with Winston. And I don't have that with the other guys. I feel like I know who Hill is, and I feel like I know who Siemian is. And now it's like really trying to say, who do you think could do a better job in the short term? But I'm going to make a point that we complain, or, you know, like make jokes, and I hear it all the time about drafting guards, and we're like, oh, we need receivers, right? Wesley, we're texting about that. It's like, no, we'll draft a defensive tackle or guard. You can't tell me that a game like this was won because of all those draft picks that went into the offensive line and making sure that we had people on defense. And again, particularly the offensive line, to help whatever quarterback you throw in the game be more successful. Just today, Craig was showing some videos of McCoy. And he was just a beast in this game. I mean, a pulling center that can take a via man, you know, one-on-one and, you know, I don't want to say beat, but, you know, it's a push and then pull and get on a linebacker like White. And you just got to say, man, there's some good logic to those draft picks that go into the big boys. And I know we know that, and we'd like to see some more offensive players, and we probably should have made a better effort, but boy, that offensive line sure pays off when you now have Trevor Siemian playing quarterback for you. So any thoughts on that, or should we just move on?
Yeah. I mean, our commitment to the trenches has been a true difference maker the last years. And now we're getting to where we can coach up some defensive linemen that weren't drafted by anybody ever.
Okay. So here's something I'd like to point out too. You have, how many times in the past have you been jealous of other teams that seem to pick up some guy from another team? You know, oh, he was drafted in the second round, third round, had all this potential, and he didn't do squat. And then, you know, then the New England Patriots picked him up, and now he's a Pro Bowler with 13
We already
sacks.
Talked about Kevin White, Dave.
Oh, okay.
We already talked about Kevin White.
There's more. I mean, what about Passio, if I'm even pronouncing his name right?
Man, hey, that guy's – he makes a flashy play once or twice every game. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy that's on a minimum, like, I know he's making less than $2 million, like 1.1, 1.2, something.
Yeah,
like that.
It's a very
3 years with the Chiefs, who need help on their defensive line. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy that they just walked away. We got for nothing.
And he's doing it from the inside. Almost all of his really good plays come from the inside.
And that's and he's one of those guys in a field of massive guys, is a big dude. Like, yes. I realize he's 6'7", 270. He looks every bit of that.
I wonder if that 270 is not when, like, he came into the league, because he sure don't look. I mean, because listen, he Davenport, you know, he's a 6'6", 260 guy, right? And they're supposed to be similar in size, and so is Turner, but he looks much bigger than them.
Passing on looks 2 inches tall. I've never seen Turner next to him, because I've only seen Passing on the field. So I just, yeah.
Oh, so I thought you actually had something to say. You're no, just no, like, no, never, I just gotta make that comment and I'm done. But no, he's huge. And here's the thing that make you have the return of Onyemata, which, you know, this kind of makes some points. We saw Davenport come back last week and he was wrecking things. I mean, splash plays, and you have to stop and say, that's the exception. You know what I'm saying? Because Onyemata comes back. Now, I know it's harder to make plays in the middle there, but Onyemata really not didn't do anything necessarily to make you say, wow. But when you have a guy like Onyemata, now all of a sudden you put a pass rusher like Passano next to him, and you'll see this guy make even more plays. It's all one-on-ones for him. So I think that this
Cam pass Jordan's rush, 5 years younger now.
Right.
Then, like, the Davenport thing, and I'm saying this in a positive way. It's comical now how much he can impact a game without getting any quarterback hits or sacks. You watch it. It's a completely different team when that guy is playing. And his biggest problem now is not can he get a sack or finish. It's can he be on the damn field?
Can he be healthy? Yeah.
He is so impactful. And it's not, it's weird because it's not because he's being double teamed. It's not because they're still double teaming Cam Jordan, which is just, awesome to me. But he moves whoever's in front of him. He throws them in the way of the quarterback. And now he plays great against the run. Like, it's just so weird with Davenport. And we've joked about it. Well, he didn't get any finishes. He didn't have a number. I don't care anymore. Him being on the field, like, it's just, it's comical how big of an impact he makes with no, hardly any.
I think you just made the point. I think what happened was, obviously comes in, he's two first round picks and he's injured. And people, especially average, whatever Heath called them last week, low IQ idiots that listen to our show or something.
Other
that's
shows.
Not how we feel, but I'm just saying something like that. No, I'm kidding. But the point is, I think the average fan looks at it and says, no sacks. And he didn't do this or that. And he's now, I think people have just gotten to the point where they realize that what he brings to the team goes well beyond sacks. Now, of course, that would help. And of course,
please get a few sacks.
Yeah. But the thing is, how does someone consistently be as disruptive as he is and never get a sack? Heath, you've been quiet over there. Why don't you share some insight on this? Confusion?
So Dave Hendrickson this weekend. No,
oh, just, stop it.
Stop it. He would have gotten a sack. Davenport would have had a sack this week if it wouldn't have been for a hold, and he drew the penalty on it. It was an obvious.
He's done that a couple of times.
Yeah, I mean, so he was really close this week. Look, I'm not sure why it is that, my only theory is he disrupts on that side, he shoves the play to the other side into the waiting arms of
it has to be
Cam Jordan, and so it's almost like they're aware of him and they're going, we're going to go the other way and he's going to blow up the backside and we're going to keep going the other way. And then, where Jordan and those guys are waiting on the other side because.
It's almost you think you'd accidentally get a sack somehow.
Yeah.
But no, he's a defensive tackle in a defensive end's body. And I think that's how he plays. Everything he does.
There was one play where I think Passano actually got credit for the sack, but Cam Jordan also fell on the guy, and then Davenport. They all three around him, and Davenport was third out of three to actually hit the to fall on top of. He's even laid that falling on, but it's like not sure why, but he just kind of can't quite get there. But
I think
it's what we said last week. He's still engaged most of the time, whether he's being held or whether he just. He's still got a lot of times it's just that he's still got a hold of. I really think his strategy is to try to take the offensive lineman and hit the quarterback with the offensive line. Well, use it as a weapon.
Maybe just take him by the ankle and just beat him over the head with the. He got penalized for that last week. He's like, I'm just going to throw you over there. No, that's unfairness, illegal unfairness against number 92. But anyway, I think it's really crazy. But I think what Wesley said really puts it in perspective the best. It's at the end of the day, you just get to the point where, anybody who says he's not good just doesn't understand football. That to me is bottom line. But the average person looks at his stats and says, oh man, he's just not any good. If you watch the game, you realize that he just disrupts everything. The quarterback's uncomfortable. He's pushing guys around, but we need to move on to a different topic. You kind of brought up Michael Thomas, and I had a thought that I wanted to bring up, but now after some more things and more comments on Twitter, I don't know if this even, but I'm like, okay, so Michael Thomas isn't come back. We're winning without him. Now, do we need him to be a better offense? Absolutely. But I started thinking, like, Wesley, we're talking about our next three games. We play Atlanta, we play Tennessee without Henry, and then I think we play the Eagles.
Correct.
And I think all three of those games, assuming, you know, we stay the same health-wise, the same, we should be able to beat those guys. Now, we also agree we could lose to any one of them, but we should beat those guys with or without Michael Thomas. And at some point, if he does plan on coming back, aren't we more – don't we need him in the last part of the season, last third of the schedule, then we and in the playoffs than we do right now anyway? So if that's what he feels he needs to do to get healthy, even though I kind of can't help but just roll my eyes at it, and we can go into that some more. But I'll start with Heath. Michael Thomas, I mean, it looks like we're not – it looks like it doesn't matter what I think would be okay. We're not going to get him back until at least – hell, we're halfway through the season already.
Right. No, I mean, look, a healthy Michael Thomas you want at any time that you can get him, right? He'd have made Breeze a better quarterback. He would have made Winston a better quarterback, and he would certainly help to make either Simeon or Hill a better quarterback. And so we could really, really use him. Now, of course, granted, he's actually still healthy and still at least, you know, 80% of what Michael Thomas was pre-injury. But – you know, I guess, yes, you know, if it turns out that he doesn't come back until later in the season, it's certainly a time that where we'll probably need him more than we will against Atlanta and Tennessee and Philadelphia and the Dolphins and people like that. Of course, you know, we said the same thing about the Giants and that didn't go so well, but I don't know, man. I said before this season even started that I just wasn't sure if Michael Thomas would ever even play for the Saints again.
Well,
I don't know that I necessarily knew that it would be that he would still be out with the injury at this point. I just thought the relationship was going to blow up and, you know, there's just a part of me that feels like he's never going to get healthy and back on the field. The Saints are going to have had enough. Things are going to blow up again. Feelings are going to get hurt. And some kind of way we're going to wind up not ever actually seeing Michael Thomas back on out on the field in the Saints uniform.
Well, with you and over on Don't Patrol with Gunn, thank you. That y'all both say the same thing. He's putting his hot take is that he doesn't think that Michael Thomas. Matter of fact, he doubled down today, and I don't know if he was serious, but he said, I don't know if he's playing for anybody again, and I highly doubt that. But at this point, that's where I'm just starting. He put out another tweet today, and it just seems like everything, and if it's his mentality, is poor me. Like, I'm being abused, and, oh, man, they treat me bad. And it's just like, I don't know. That's the inference in it anyway, Wesley.
My caveat in all this is he's always done cryptic tweets, and I don't know how much he means and, like, literally of anything that he tweets. My thing that throws me off here is this is a guy who was at the game Sunday, high-fiving teammates, being supportive, like telling the offense, he went down the offensive line, telling each and every one of them, great job. So I'm not sure. Like, I honestly have no idea. I'm frustrated. In regards to our conversation earlier, even losing Jameis Winston, if you told me that this next week, Michael Thomas was coming back 100% healthy, I'd be like, the whole league's in trouble, even with Trevor Siemian or Taysom Hill, because that guy's going to be open. If any of them on their worst day can throw a pass that he can be open on, and then it opens up some stuff downfield that we have, the receivers to catch down there. Without him, I mean, we have all those question marks that we discussed in the first segment of, like, what is this team? How good can they be? How far can they go? But it's weird. Again, all the cryptic tweets, and then he still shows up to games. And
honestly, it's funny.
We got his uncle saying that he's almost healthy and he's just waiting until he's 100%. And
it's funny how I have certain feelings about stuff. And, you know, we text each other quite a bit, but we don't have any verbal conversations. And then I get with you guys and I kind of, you make me feel a little bit better about it. I'm just like, man, this guy, he ain't coming back. And then, and then listening to Gunn, I'm like, oh man, we really not. And then Heath is like, and I'm like, yeah. And then you over here, like, no, man, he's high-fiving everybody. I'm like, yeah, he's coming back. You know, so I don't know what that means, but it's getting to the point you said frustrating, and that's what it is. It's just at some point. But here's the thing. We could easily hear tomorrow on Wednesday, hey, man, he's practicing on a limited basis today and, you know, testing it out. And then all of a sudden, like you said, we get excited. So let's move to the other side of the ball before we forget, because while our offense, I don't know if it's fair to say overperformed, they outperformed my expectations, especially with the loss of Winston. But defensively, the first thing I'm going to do, I guess we got to give peanut butter and jelly time his due, picks off the GOAT and closes the game out, you know, with a touchdown. And, you know, if you think about it, man, that's the, first games against the Bucks that we picked them off pick six. So Wesley, you know, defensively, I'm a little disappointed because I want shut down defense, but you made a good point, man. That's a lot of talent to shut down.
Yeah, this probably is in this day's NFL with you can't be too physical.
Low testosterone.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, no, less bend, all that. You're just not going to shut down teams unless they're bad teams. Obviously you throw in the Packers game to start the season, but there's things that can explain that. But
I agree.
Like this, and just like, I mean, I get it. Last year we beat this team in the middle of the season 38-3. Again, that's an anomaly of just a game that doesn't happen in today's NFL. This is as good as you could expect this to be. And yes, on the offensive side, that we scored way more points than any of us probably would have guessed with Jameis or without Jameis. This defense, one, they made Tampa Bay play a lot of plays. They held them to small plays. They got them, made them drive and get to a lot of third downs, and then was opportune. I mean, you got pressure on the quarterback at the right time, and when he threw an interception, somebody caught it.
You know, that's the first time I've heard anybody put it that way. You know what? We forced them to go 16 plays and 97 yards for that touchdown.
But how long have the Saints been giving up the 45-yard play?
Right. No.
It's like, oh, okay. Well, yeah.
Like I said, it's the first time I've heard somebody put it that way. But you are right. At the end of the day, an offense with that much skill. Matter of fact, during the game, I was sitting there getting frustrated. And I'm like, how do you stop this offense if Brown is healthy and a sort of healthy Gronk? How do you stop it, Heath? How does anybody stop?
That's a good question. Yeah, it's a good question. Considering they won the Super Bowl last year, I guess you could say nobody. But it's funny. I guess we start to get a little spoiled, I guess, or whatever. But I even though we had the turnovers when we needed them and big plays, like, you know, I was kind of a little bit disappointed. You know, there was a time there when I was like, man, you know, we just can't shut them. I think it was, you know, we were up 23-7, I believe, right? And then we gave up two touchdowns. They closed it to 23-21. And it seemed like that was just a little too easy or whatever,
yeah,
you know? And
I'm back not to back expecting, drives.
Yeah, I'm not expecting Lattimore to be giving up passes and stuff like that. But you know, this is a really talented team. And I mean, you know, Godwin and Evans and the GOAT and Fournette, who's been playing really well. And so I guess if you want to look at a spot, we only gave up about 70 rushing yards to him. I guess that's a bright spot. You know, Brady got his 375 or something like that. But, you know, I guess in the end, it doesn't really matter. You know, like we said before, it you don't judge the game. It's the winner isn't who got the most yards or the least yards or whatever. It's on a scoreboard. And so who cares? You know, we got it done.
You know, I'm going to add to that the comment that Wesley made before. It's like, you know, or actually we may have talked about this before the show, but it's like you don't appreciate how good the Bucs are because we beat them all the time, right? And then the same applies to Evans. I mean, people are like, oh, Evans, man, he's a pro. And I'm like, nah, you know, sad because he really doesn't do anything. But all of a sudden, when things started not going our way and Lattimore had a couple of breakdowns with Evans and even some of the replays they would show, like they'll show a replay of Lattimore, you know, shutting somebody down. They showed him on Evans. I'm like, damn, he was open right there and they just didn't get him the ball. And so I think my opinion of Evans is kind of tainted because when I really, really focus and I'm really paying attention, not just casually watching, he don't do anything. So this game, even that, whenever I started seeing him be a good player, I'm like, I mean, you talking about all these guys, how do you stop them? One of the things that I thought was interesting, was I noticed at the end of the game, Kawan Alexander making a bunch of plays, splash plays. But what's interesting to me is that Werner still started the game and he still played a lot. And one of two things goes through my mind is that while either Kawan Alexander makes these big splash plays, but is, and we've observed, heard all of it, that sometimes he's not fundamentally sound in his assignments. And so that makes me wonder if the Saints say, hey, this kid's, meaning Werner's more fundamentally sound, even though he may not make as many splash plays, or is it that he's not fully healthy? Or is it that the Saints have said he's always getting hurt, so let's just keep him healthy for the fourth quarter? And because Wesley, he comes in the fourth quarter and it's like every play is this guy, he's shot out of a cannon and he gets up and he's doing that bunny hop thing. And it's just super hype. And I'm like, how do they not keep him on the field more? And then I realized the answer to that is because he can't stay healthy. It may not be that, but give me your thoughts.
Yeah. I wish that I could break down and get to take the time to look at what's going on. There's only a 6-play difference between the two. Werner played 6 more plays than Alexander. Alexander's playing a significant amount. And I wish I could look at how many plays Werner and Alexander and DeMario were all on the field together.
Right.
I mean, it's honestly for what we thought was going to happen this year, a ridiculous problem that we have right now.
Right.
Some linebacker makes a pretty damn good play every other play. And we have no idea, like before the play, like which linebacker is on the field or what's going on. And I do believe there's something to Kwan is in there on certain plays where he can be assigned to be a heat seeking missile. And he's playing it perfect. And I think that problems with Kwan in the past was, well, you had plays in there where you're like, okay, this is a Kwan type play. And then the next play wasn't, but you're like, well, I still need him in there. Like, because you know, most teams, he's still better than your backup. Dennis Allen's being really smart right now on which play, who's playing which play and what the assignment is, and dissecting what the offense is probably going to do. He's just putting people in a good position because they're all three of them are playing out of this world.
Yeah. I mean, Heath, you talking about Wesley stole my thunder there. It's six more snaps for Werner than Kawan. And it's obviously not, it's not that he can't play or he's not playing as well. I mean, the guy is playing extremely well, but they can't take Werner off the field. Or is it that they're just trying to save him a bit?
I think it's a combination. You know, I think it's basically working out the way we would have hoped it worked out. Werner's playing well enough that, quite frankly, you could leave him on the field all the time. But, oh, hey, we also happen to have this guy that when he's healthy, he's about as good as it gets, you know. And so they put Werner in early and letting him, you know, it seemed as though Werner played it almost seemed they've gone by halves. It seemed like Werner played a lot early.
Yes, I agree.
And Kwan played a lot late. And it may also be telling that Kwan was there when it was money time at the end.
I agree.
It was all Kwan all the time, you know? And so whether it's accidental or on purpose, I think it's working out perfectly. What more could you ask for? They're able to platoon two guys at a linebacker position that are both playing really great. And then of course you got the freak of nature playing next to him that no matter how old he gets, he seems to almost be getting better and better. So,
well, one of the things too, element that I didn't add to it is that the chances, I don't know if there's a great chance that Kwan Alexander's on his team next year. And I think that the team recognizes that they need to make sure that Werner continues to develop. So I think really the answer to it is a combination of everything you guys said. It's a matter of, we got to keep Kwan healthy because he's a playmaker. So you know what, let's ease him in the game. Let Werner get some snaps early. He's doing well. So I'm not just saying let's let him, like he's not earning it. But I mean, at the end of the day, the flash plays that Kwan makes is just like, I start being like, well, you know, is Kwan really that good? And we got Werner. And then all of a sudden he comes in the game. And you're like, holy crap, man, this guy's just, chasing down plays from the backside. It's very impressive. One of the things that before I move on to this, and I guess I should have said something during the offensive
Real quick, Dave, okay. I just want to say same category kind of thing. Roby and Adebo played 5 more snaps than Roby, 33-28 instead of the 33-27 of Alexander. It really makes me think that our defensive coaches are at a different level of recognizing things and looking for certain positions to put players in, because that's two players that in our minds are competing for the same position that are on the field in this kind of very similar, you know, kind of numbers and stuff like that.
Mark Ingram, we trade for Mark Ingram. I just realized something as I was saying that there, Wesley. But he comes in, I think he does an outstanding job. I mean, you know, it's not that he was killing it. It's not that he was, you know, running over people. Well, actually he did a little bit, but 6 carries, 27 yards, 4.5. He also had some receptions, screen passes. He blocked well in the passing game, protecting the quarterback. At first, I wasn't very excited about the move. I know as far as personality wise, everyone was just stoked that we got this guy back. I was a little bit, you know, but honestly, he looks like a guy that, and going back and tying it into the Taysom Hill thing, you know, like this guy brings an element that is, you know, kind of intersects a little bit with what Taysom Hill does in terms of running hard. You can have him more in short yardage, pounding the ball. So I think that Ingram has turned out to be a pretty good acquisition, especially because we gave a 9th round pick in 2028. Not sure exactly the conditions on that, but Heath, your good friend, Mark Ingram.
Yeah. We talked about this when, as soon as we all heard about the signing, it was, you know, is this guy got anything left? Is he, you know, but like you said, in reality, what was it? A 7th round pick in
2024.
Okay. So, yep. And look, I mean, he came in and took advantage of the opportunities they gave him. I can't think of a bad play that he had, or a negative play or anything. So quite frankly, I mean, he did about what all you could expect of him. And I think it was a help, you know, it wasn't a ton of how many carries, it was 6 carries and a couple of receptions.
Yeah.
So, you know, 8 touches or whatever it was. So not a ton.
22 plays.
22 plays. And, you know, and like you said, and we had alluded to this even before the game, that he's always been good in pass protection and everything. And we saw that again yesterday and or Sunday. And so, yeah, I mean, so far so good. You know, I mean, will it last? I don't know. You know, will Tony Jones Jr. kind of regain that spot when he comes back? What'll happen with that, with him and Ingram now and all? I don't know, but one game out, you know, great. I like it.
That's what I thought would happen. I thought, okay, they just need somebody, because Tony Jones is still going to be out a couple of 2 or 3 games, and Kamara is just getting worked too hard. And now I'm like, I don't know if that's the case, man, but you know, we'll see. I don't know. I feel like Tony Jones Jr. is more of a, if I had to say which side of the spectrum, he's more of an Alvin Kamara type than he is an Ingram type. So I think there might be room for all 3 of them, especially as much as we're running the ball. You need to have a deep, you know, running back room. Any thoughts there, Wesley?
I think the most valuable thing that Ingram did is he allowed Kamara to play 51 snaps instead of the full 76 that our offense did. Being able to take him out and, again, the blocking is important. I mean, I know everybody got excited about the screen pass that looked like, you know, a play that we've seen Ingram do before, and he got a first down on it and, you know, I think he'll do fine here in the offense. I think Peyton will put him in positions to play well, and he'll be able to help protect the quarterback, which is important.
All right. So let's transition here to a controversial subject, and that subject is Sean Payton and his play calling. It took a lot of criticism. One of them was a 4th down attempt early in the game in our own territory that failed. And another was when we got a 1st down and goal at the end of the game, 3 passes, one of them was complete and didn't burn any clock. And I'm not going to give my opinion. I'll let Heath, he looks like he has some stuff to say. So go ahead, Heath, let him have it.
No, I mean, look, the way that set up at the end was, I was just thinking it. I was already getting ready to type it. I was already starting to see that, you know, I would be here today screaming about how Sean Payton lost us that game, right? I could not believe that in that position, he threw the ball again. And then once you throw the first time and, you know, get it, now you kind of got to double down on the second one, and right, then it just gets worse. And in the end, they ran about 14 seconds of clock when, quite frankly, they could have ran the clock out. I mean, And so, you know, that's another one of those situations where Peyton gets a little too cute. Of course, had it worked, we'd all be talking about how he's on another level from everybody else.
Well, okay, just for the sake, I'm going to just let Wesley have his say in it. But in fairness, the Buccaneers had all three timeouts. We wouldn't have been able to run the clock out. And so was it two timeouts?
Yeah, two timeouts.
Okay, two timeouts. And we wouldn't have been able to run the clock out. And I guess I'm not turning it over to Wesley. I just feel like how many times have – I mean, all they needed was a field goal.
Not run it out, but yeah, it was a minute and 50-something seconds with first down. I mean, you could have ran it pretty
All I'm saying is I understand why he was thinking that way. And he explained it in the post game. Wesley, go ahead. So I want to reiterate that traditional thinking. I completely agree that that's not the fundamental way to do it. And so I'm not disagreeing with you, Heath, but I guess I'm just like, I feel it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation based on history.
So I'm going to say the thing that Sean Payton couldn't say in his press conference.
Fuck all
here's
you
what,
guys.
Here's went through my head when we got under the 2 minute warning with that ball. I was like, we're going to be sitting here trying to kick a fucking field goal with Brian Johnson with 15 seconds left. And I don't want to fucking do that. Cause Brian Johnson's been fine on field goals, not extra points, but I did not want the good game coming down to that either. So Heath, I agree with you 100%, but I didn't like either position. I didn't like the running or throwing or just trying to run out the clock and Brian Johnson kicking a field goal. And I agree with you, Dave. Time wouldn't have quite expired, but with 30 seconds left, I didn't want the game being on Brian Johnson's foot either. And I'm not saying I want it on Simeon's arm,
but
I damn sure didn't want it on Johnson's foot. I think both scenarios were terrible.
I'd rather have Johnson's foot from 20 yards away.
I completely hated the fourth and one in the first quarter.
Tell me real quick, somebody do the math. How much time would we have? There was a minute 50-something, right? Two timeouts. You can only burn 40 seconds.
You could have got it down to about 50.
How do you figure that? Because
run the ball takes 5 or 6 seconds.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay, you include the play itself is another.
And then you run 40 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. 50 to 50.
Under a minute. Okay, yeah. You get it under a minute.
Okay. So I was thinking more like a minute 10. I wasn't considering the actual play would take 5 seconds or 7 seconds. Maybe not that much. But I guess here was one of the things that I thought is that Nobody complains when it works.
No,
I was all over the internet.
Heath had to delete his text.
I didn't see any posts on any of the forums that said, "Freaking, why in the hell did they run Kamara on that sweep, which almost was terrible because he bobbled the ball that gave us a touchdown on fourth down? What's stupid, you know?" But as soon as you do something that isn't aggressive. And that's what Peyton was basically saying. He said, look, we knew we were going to have to do some dangerous things because we had to score points. And so I guess what I'm saying is I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not saying I agree with it. What I'm saying is it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't. I have seen both sides of the coin where they try to be aggressive and it bites them in the butt, or they try to do the thing where they run out the clock and it still bites them in the butt with guys like Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and Brady. So my point is that it's just one of those things where you just say, man, I just got to do what I got to do. And
yeah, let's recap the situation, right? A minute and 50, whatever, side, 53. So they have two timeouts. What was the score at that point in the game?
We were
Saints losing.
No,
right, but what was the,
we were losing.
Yeah.
By
okay.
One.
We had to be.
We're,
yeah. Right.
We're, I mean, we're losing by one.
Yeah. We're losing by one. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, I want to move on. I feel like your point got defeated there.
Piggyback with that.
No, the point I was going to make just then did, but I still stand. With Trevor Siemian in the game at this point, you run the ball, run the
give
clock
it to Kamara.
Down, you take the short field goal that I think Brian Johnson is pretty capable of. At this point, it would have been shorter than the new extra point or whatever. And, you know, anyway.
So with that, Dave, kind of piggybacked off of it. If this team wins 11 games, is Sean Payton the coach of the year finally?
Oh man, he has to be.
Would there ever have been a more handicapped 10 win plus team? I mean, ever? I don't know.
Okay. So the point is I get the whole idea. Usually it's the team that the Drew Brees led team that won 12 games and just was amazing and everything went great? Or is it the Aaron Rodgers led team that won 13 games and, oh, they were amazing? Which amazing team with an amazing quarterback wins it? Is it not fair to say, man, look, here's a 10 or 11 win team that we did it with two, like a refurbished quarterback and then a backup quarterback.
And Alex Arma Jr. and Kevin White.
I
brought this up earlier in the year. No Drew Brees, lose James. 10 people caught the ball. 10 different New Orleans Saints caught the ball. And Juwan Johnson dropped the ball when he hit the ground. I'm not saying it would have been an easy catch, but he had the ball caught. We would have had 11 different people caught a ball if Juwan Johnson holds on to that ball inside the 10. We for years said it's the greatness of Drew Brees. 8 different receivers caught a ball.
Spreading it out.
Yeah. 9 different. Drew Brees is gone, and Jameis Winston's doing it, and Trevor Siemian is doing it.
Okay, well, the difference is Drew Brees did it at the clip of 70-72% completion.
No,
58%.
Agreed, definitely. Well,
all these guys with 1 in 3 receptions had like 5 or 6 with Drew Brees. But what's missing here is what taints that a little bit is the fact that when you have a talent like Garrett Griffin on the field, just exposing that defense.
Kudos to Garrett Griffin. When he caught the ball, he turned around and hit somebody, man.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Punished somebody after he caught the ball. I love it.
Don't you try to tackle me.
Alex Arma flinched. He wanted to hit somebody and nobody was in yards of it. He turned around at the goal line and flinched and nobody
I'm sorry. I love those kind of tight ends, the ones that catch the ball and you just see them like their big old hips and thick ankles and just run somebody. And you can see the defensive backs, their eyes are getting as big as quarters. Like, oh no, what do I do? And they diving in his ankles and stuff. And like, no fair dodging, man. Just straight up the field. Don't get in my way. So it's good stuff. All right. Let's start. Heath, any final thoughts? Anything that missed that you want to discuss?
No, my final thoughts are just, you know, where do we go from here? The mystery of what's going to happen at quarterback. I'm interested to see. My gut tells me that Peyton is going to go with the guy that was actually in competition for the starting position on this, you know, on this team. But my head and heart says, I would like to see Siemian get practice this week, come into the game prepared, ready to start, and have Taysom Hill go back to the role that his normal gadget role, where he can help us, at multiple positions, like Wes was saying before. And I think that adds, the sum of those parts is greater to me than it is the other way around. But, I don't think that's the way it's going to go. I think we're going to see Taysom, and we're going to watch him hold the ball too long, and we're going to watch him try to throw it deep to Harris and underthrow it or overthrow him by or whatever. I don't even know. He's not going to overthrow him, but he'll underthrow him.
Right. And Heath, when he drops back and launches one and he actually, like, hits Harrison stride, are we going to have a moment like Kevin White did where the sideline blows up and everybody's,
We'll have to, because he's done it once in the past. He's – I don't remember when it was, but he dropped back and did hit a long pass down the field. I don't remember who it was and when it was, but he's done it at least once, so it's possible.
It was Emmanuel Sanders against the Falcons last year.
There you go.
Thank you there, Mr. Remember Everything. All right. Wesley, your turn. Any final thoughts? Anything you want to bring up?
Yeah, so kind of in that same thing, I think the excuse that Sean Payton gave for why Jameis Winston was the starting quarterback was, well, he had played well, but Taysom was valuable in this other role too. I think that he can use that same excuse without saying, like, Taysom, I don't believe in you.
But at some point, Taysom?
What's he going to do? Not sign with us next year? I mean, the guy's gone. This is such, I would be driven nuts by this, but this has been fun this year. I think we went into the offseason going, man, losing Drew Brees, what is this team? We go through the whole offseason going, man, we got a rookie cornerback. Everybody's getting hurt.
So
we have
many
receivers.
Questions.
All these questions. Like, we don't know who anybody is on the team. We have, rookie linebacker that everybody's mad that we drafted Werner. And then it starts coming together and we're like, okay, we're starting to see what this team is a little bit. And Jameis is getting this. And, Michael Thomas can come back. And Onyemata's coming back. And we're kind of getting excited. We're back to square one for the third time in 6 months.
Yeah.
Wait, where we have truly, I realize there is a could be dominant defense, but definitely a solid defense here. besides that, we have no idea what this team is outside of Kamara. Like, right. We got an offensive line that finally, for the first time, the same five guys played all 100% of the snaps, which is great for the first time this year. But besides that offensive line and Kamara, like, we have no idea what to expect. It's kind of fun because we're playing with house money. We're not expected to win the Super Bowl this year. Like, I mean, let's wreck some people's dreams. Let's hurt Tom Brady. Let's intercept him some more here in a few weeks. I mean, anything that we do beyond that's just kind of fun. And I feel like so many years there's been so much pressure with every single Saints game where it's like, we've got to get to the Super Bowl. We got to get home field advantage so Brees can get his last Super Bowl. And
right.
And again, I want to win. I want to win the playoffs. I want to win the Super Bowl. But this is just kind of fun, and let's see what this team is. And then we're going to start all over again in the offseason because probably all three of these quarterbacks won't be on the team next year, Simeon and Hill and maybe Winston. So we'll be doing this all over again in a few months.
Yeah. I mean, that's some perspective. It really is.
It's fun. This is, I mean, we still don't know what the hell this team is, but
I mean, fun, but yet listen, I completely agree with everything you said, but the caveat in it is like, it's like, we don't know what we are, you know, we're going to be rebuilding. But I still think we can win 11 games.
I really think we, I think we can too.
Which is absurd.
There's no excuse for it. There's no reason we should win.
We don't know who the quarterback is. We'll have a new guy, but you know, we'll win 11.
Hey,
you know,
right now we're behind.
Because we're already at five.
We are only in second place to the Bucks because they've played one more game than us.
Right.
We have the tiebreaker. I get it. We're in second place in the division. It's because they've had an extra game. We've had a bye week.
Well, I had a disappointing moment.
To me, we have the tiebreaker with them. We've lost the same amount of games.
I had a disappointing moment when I looked at the standings and I literally went to look just to see the Saints at the top. And I was like, and then it hit me.
It's just because they played one more game.
Like, next week, they're on a bye.
So next week, we're in first place. We beat the freaking Atlanta Falcons in 5 days. We're in first place.
All right. So my big observation and moment epiphany is, we've done this show, what would we say, 6 years now, 7 years, whatever. And I don't think we've ever dropped the F bomb. And it flew out of my mouth. And it's like everybody else.
I followed your lead. I dropped one just a minute later because I go, okay.
That's what I'm saying. Everybody's just like, oh, I've been wanting to do this, Dave. Thanks for opening Pandora's box. You know, so anyway, I think that's about all the show we have. I want to thank all you guys for hanging out with us and listening. We do appreciate it, even if we don't say it enough. Also, you know, on the feed, we talk about it. I don't have the script. I decided just to hell with that. But man, we do have a ton of stuff on the Dome Patrol United feed. You talking about a gambling show, an LSU show, another great Saints show.
The Canadian show.
The Canadians talk about soccer, you know, and some European stuff. I don't remember. But it's really, really a great opportunity. One feed, everything. So I want to thank all the guys that we have a huge team now, man. It's, you know, all the BS.
I don't think you've said Dome Patrol yet.
I said Dome Patrol United.
Okay, you did. Okay.
Yeah. Gave them a little kudos there, but that's the Dome Patrol United feed that has all these things on it. So anyway, for Heath Elson-San and Wesley Coleman, I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to BS and Beer podcast, and we will talk to you next week.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists. Writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back, and that's the way it is.
Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, girl, give your time to Davey, Heath, and Thomas. We do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Ooh. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Ooh. Oh, boy, don't.